the Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
And it is Thursday night, and if you can hear my voice, you are exactly where you need to be. I am your host, Rick Hale, and this is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. So, tonight, folks, I am back. Unfortunately, Karen is not going to be able to join us again. She is either enjoying time with her family or being completely terrified trying to teach her 16-year-old son how to drive a car. So, either one, I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. But anyways, tonight we do have a good show lined up for you. We're going to be welcomed back to the show. We actually had a mulligan on this one. For those of you who don't know, mulligan is a do-over in golf. So we got Michael White with investigator with Black Wolf Paranormal. He is also the author of the Paranormal Investigator's Handbook, A Beginner's Guide. There's a lot of those out there. Hopefully Michael can tell us something new. So we'll see. But So a couple of days ago, I had Cheryl post a picture to the website, and it was a picture that I took when my family and I were at the Wisconsin State Fair up near Milwaukee past Friday. We're watching the horses, and when I took a picture, up in the right-hand corner of the picture, you could almost see what looks like the face of a very sad woman. You can find it at the website in the blog area. It says Spirit or Pareidolia. I could not tell you how excited I was when I first saw this. I was like, this is the most amazing picture I'd ever seen. But after having some friends take a look at it, and after having my wife take a look at it, who my wife is the one that keeps me grounded. You know what I'm saying? So I don't get too high-minded with stuff. But after really considering it and after looking at the photograph, I'm going to go with matrixing. No, I'm totally joking. I hate that word. It has nothing to do with that. Like I said last week, no, I'm going to go with a pattern recognition. I don't think there's anything there, but you know what? Why don't you take a look at it if you get a chance to? You know, head over to the homepage at paranormalunderground.net, take a look at it. It's in the blog section. And I don't know. Maybe you could tell me something you think it is. It could be something there. I don't know. I took it with my cell phone, which, you know, a lot of people would say, well, you took it with your cell phone, so you get that app with your phone. Rick doesn't roll like that, anybody who knows me. So, but, yeah, go ahead, go over, take a look at that picture, you know, contact me through Facebook or even through the website and let me know what you think. So, also, too, there's another thing that I wanted to talk about real quick before we go to our guest, Michael White of Black Wolf Paranormal. Drama. You know, a couple days ago I'm at work and I'm looking through my Facebook and I'm looking at everybody's posts, and the amount of drama in the paranormal field right now it's kind of getting out of hand. This is not the Jersey Shore. This is not the hills. This is a serious field of scientific as well as spiritual inquiry. And I'm not going to say that nobody cares about your problems, because that's not necessarily the truth. But when you go on Facebook and you're bullying other people, or you know, somebody kicks you out of a group and you go on and you're smashing and trashing them all over the place, just if you like this field, if you take it at all seriously, you know, try and cut back on the dramatics a little bit. It really seriously is getting out of hand. This is not a reality TV show, and by reality, I say reality. Yes, I am making air quotes with that. This is a serious field of scientific as well as spiritual research, and it should be treated as thus. So, basically, that's all I really have for you guys tonight. For right now at the beginning, what we're going to do is we're going to go to break a little bit early, and then when we come back, we're going to have Michael White of Black Wolf Paranormal. He is also the author of Paranormal Investigator's Handbook, A Beginner's Guide. So stick around. You are listening to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. It's going to be live.
Glenn, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at Paranormal UG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
This is John Mayer for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. On stage, it's fun to push the limits and see where it takes me. Off stage, it's a different story. Get behind the wheel of a car after you've been drinking and you risk causing a crash, hurting, or even killing someone. When you're enjoying a few drinks, know your limit and don't push it. Plan ahead and give up the keys. You'll make it a safer weekend for everyone.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network. Operating frequency on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Rick Hale. Karen could not make it again tonight, and she'll be back with us in a couple of weeks. So I would like to say welcome back to Michael White of Black Wolf Paranormal and also the author of Paranormal Investigator Handbook, A Beginner's Guide. Thank you, Michael, for coming back, granting us this mulligan, and for, you know, being a good guy about it. So welcome to the underground.
Well, thank you for having me back. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks. So, you know, Black Wolf Paranormal, I got to tell you, that is a really, really cool name for a paranormal group. Where exactly did you come up with that name?
Well, I didn't. That's the dream child of Colette and her co-founder, AJ, as well as Brenda. And Colette used to raise wolves, so she can give you a lot more history on it than I could. But yeah, that is a cool name, and I was really, you know, I'm happy to be associated with it, not just because it's a cool name, but just a good group of folks.
Yeah. So I usually like to ask this question of everybody that we have on our show who's an investigator, and you know, it's of course it's a standard question. I think, what is it that interested you in this field? And before you answer, allow me to just say, if you say anything that has to do with your D&D game letting out early on a Wednesday night and you checked out a cool new television show on Sci-Fi, I do reserve the right to make fun of you. Go.
Oh, well, then go ahead and start. I think the event that really, I think when I was 7 years old, I had a paranormal event happen. That kind of changed my whole world, so to speak. Now, I grew up in, you know, the Hollywood Burbank area of California.
Okay.
And kind of, to be politically correct, a lower socioeconomic status, let's put it that way.
Okay.
And so there were five of us living in a small apartment, and we had this floor grate type of furnace. I don't know if you're familiar with that. I'm sure that they've made those illegal now because of the burns that they give you on your bare feet. But that thing, when anyone would walk in the house, it would make a sound.
Okay.
And I was sound asleep one morning, and it was probably, I don't know, 2-3 o'clock, sometime like that. And that grate was making a sound like somebody was walking. And as I paid more attention to it, the pace picked up, and I noticed that my heart was probably going in the same, you know, meeting that same beat.
Sure.
And eventually, my door to my bedroom that I shared with my two brothers flew open. And immediately I, you know, hid underneath the covers and found myself being lifted up and thrown across the room. And I actually myself between the beds of both of my brothers. And I stayed there and played possum as much as I could. Until he was dawn. So, and then I got up, and of course, Ben started screaming, and it was quite a event for me. And
yeah,
and when I told my mother about this the next day, and my mom was uber Catholic, so she was, you know, telling me it was everything but, you know, anything paranormal. So, you know,
it was the wind that lifted you out of the bed and threw you up against the wall. Gotcha, Mom. Sounds like mine.
Exactly. I think that one event changed my entire life. Because, you know, of course, ever since then, as I've gotten older, and see, 7 years ago, that was 43 years ago for me. But I think that I've been kind of a paranormal thrill seeker ever since then. So it's just a matter of, you know, coming up with some techniques and procedures that are actually useful for investigation. So I think that's where I got started in it. And so it wasn't the television shows, but if you want to say that, you know, I wanted to kind of hear, I saw Ghost Hunters once, and it was great, and that's what I wanted to do.
No, I know. It's just a funny little question that I like, you know, that I ask people just to kind of weed people out, I guess you could say. But no, really, I mean, were you guys ever able to determine what it was or who it was that did this to you as a child? And,
no.
Or was it just one of those, oh, it was just, okay.
No, and, you know, nothing like that ever happened again, but that house had a lot of activity in it, and my mom, even though she was Catholic, when she wasn't around, we would play the Ouija board, and we were always in contact with something, and of course, you know, had two other brothers.
Mm-hmm.
We're always accusing each other of pushing it, you know, this
yeah. and that. Do you think that could have had anything to do with it?
What's that?
Did you think that could have had anything to do with it? I'm not really a big believer in the Ouija board because how dangerous can something be when it says Parker Brothers on it? But you know, do you think that had anything to do with it?
No, because I don't think that we brought a Ouija board in the house until I was, you know, older, like, you know, 10, like 3 years later.
So. Oh, okay. Understand.
Yeah, I don't think that one thing kind of led to the other.
Mm-hmm. So you call yourself a paranormal thrill seeker, or the paranormal thrill seeker. I kind of like the sound of that. That sounds really good. So what is it exactly? I mean, do you just go after, you know, is you're just life after death, or are there other things that you're interested in the, you know, the paranormal umbrella universe?
Well, I tell you, you know, if it's something out of the ordinary, I was always chasing it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Of course, I don't consider myself that paranormal thrill seeker anymore. I kind of like look for answers now instead of just experiences. But,
sure.
But I think that, you know, in my younger years, and even I'm 22 years in the Navy, so even when I was in the Navy, anytime I pulled into a foreign port, I was always looking for some creepy place to hang out in. But no, I'm
did you find any?
I used to, yeah, actually, quite a few. In all honesty, I think it's harder to find a place that doesn't have some kind of, you know, strange happenings than it is to find, you know, a place that does. So,
sure.
You know, whenever I would go to Europe, when I was started out as a submarine sailor, so of course that was back during the Cold War, so we were doing a lot of work coming back and forth through Europe and so forth, but that place has a lot of history, and there's always going anywhere and find, you know, some old fort or castle
yeah.
or some place that had some real history to it.
Yeah.
So I was always going there, and whenever possible, going by myself to just kind of see if I can, you know, get some kind of activity. And you know, I was successful quite a few times, and you know, other times, you know, things would happen, and you wouldn't expect them.
Right.
I was in a house in Tarawa. I don't know if you're familiar with that island. It's in the Pacific. And it's really,
no, I can't say that I am.
It's really a no place kind of an island for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But I was there for a 50-year commemorative World War II celebration that we were doing.
Okay.
excuse me. I saw, as I was walking around, I saw a man and a very young child trying to move a piece of furniture into their house, like in my hand. And when I got inside there, you know, we were talking, and I mentioned that it was a beautiful night. And in Italian, we heard, you know, bella notte, mm-hmm. or something close to that. I don't speak Italian, but I kind of looked at him, and he says, "We have an Italian goat." And I was like, "Oh, that's interesting." So I'm... Mm. These kind of things just kind of happen, and I wish that I would have had, you know, my equipment, you know, and so forth. you know, but, yeah, so I had a lot of experiences, and then, you know, after I retired, then it was the possibility of actually getting on with a team that, you know, would be able to go out and do an investigation with and actually collect some
yeah.
data and hopefully, you know, come up with something that we can, you know, show to somebody. Or
now, was Black Wolf Paranormal the first team that you worked with, or had there been others before?
There was one other team that I was with before, but I'm not going to mention their name or anything. But
that's all right.
It was just we had you know, incompatible goals and styles, I think. So
mm-hmm.
I started, you know, looking around and the team, local team, had a great reputation, so I contacted Colette and gave her a resume of sorts, and you know, I've been with them for almost 2 years now, so it's been pretty great.
So let's talk about the philosophy of Black Wolf Paranormal. I mean, I know that there are different kinds of groups. There are some groups that are very heavily spiritual. There are some groups that are very heavily scientific. Where does, you know, Black Wolf fall into that? And, you know, where does your ideas fall in with that?
Well, you know, I think one great thing about Black Wolf is that everyone on the team pretty much has their own philosophies of what's going on, and I really enjoy that, and I think Black Wolf is pretty much all-encompassing, so mm-hmm. we try to get as much hard data as we can, and everyone is very respectful of each other's philosophies and opinions.
Sure.
So, you know, that's it's pretty amazing when you can get a group that's fairly, you know, diverse with how they look at paranormal activity,
mm-hmm.
And actually get along.
Yeah.
Without the drama, you know, as you start talking about.
Yeah, and the drama gets a little bit to be too much. It's like, this is not a reality TV show. This is, you know, actuality. Sorry, I know True TV says that, but that's exactly what this is. I know that in the past with me, I've been with a couple different groups. Although, I mean, for, you know, 15, almost 20 years, I did it pretty much by myself. And, you know, I've belonged to groups that are so far at the end of the spectrum that it almost makes my brain hurt. Like, one side is completely and utterly scientific to the point that everything is quantum physics, and then to the other side of the group where it's like it's completely spiritual and we don't want to use any kind of equipment or anything of that nature. It's like, I like to think that I kind of fall right in between. I like the scientific side. I think that's great using the gizmos because I'm a dude and I like gizmos. But I also grew up in a family where there was a lot of psychic ability. So I fall right into the middle of that. I mean, how do you feel about that? Do you see yourself as being more scientific or more spiritual or somewhere in the middle?
You know, I like the middle ground, quite honestly. I think the more you can bring in to an investigation, the better investigation is going to be. And of course, you know, you really can't have an investigation without a goal. So if you're looking at the possibility of bringing in not just the best equipment, but also the best abilities, personal abilities, and your team members, then, you know, it's going to be a win-win situation. You know, hopefully your goal is going to be accomplished. And I think that's one thing that I really enjoy about Black Wolf, and that, you know, we go into an investigation. There's a clear goal, you know.
Right.
And even if it's one of those situations where serendipitously we've found a house that, you know, has been known to have activity and so forth, and we just walk in, we're not helping anybody out, we're just there to kind of answer our own questions. You know, even if we don't speak it, we understand what we're all there to do. And when we do the review of all the data, and I call data, not evidence at that point, I think it works out really well. We can answer whether or not we achieved the goal that we went out there. You know, as you know, going out and doing these investigations isn't always inexpensive, you know. I mean, there's time, there's driving, and there's hours and hours of the review to be done. So,
yeah.
if you're not paying money, you're certainly paying it in time. You know, sometimes, you know, time away from family and other events.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, it takes an awful lot out of a person.
Well, it's, you know, if you're able to balance it really well, which I've, you know, personally with me, I've been able to accomplish. I've been able to balance it really well. You know, when I got married 10 years ago, my wife knew that I was into this kind of thing. So she's always been really respectful of that. She may not always like it, but at least she's respectful of it. You know, how does, I don't know if you're a married man, but how does your significant other feel about, you know, about what you do?
Oh, well, actually, my wife and I, this Sunday, are going to be celebrating our 29th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
But, thanks. Yeah, it's pretty amazing for a retired Navy guy to say that. She's very supportive. She's not into it. She's very much into sewing and other things, and I'm not into that. So, like, she has her thing. I kind of have my thing, and that too won't mix.
My wife really keeps me grounded. Sometimes I need that. I have a tendency to be very high-minded, I guess you might say, without being, you know, pretentious. You know what I'm saying? I know what my views are, I know what my beliefs are, and I go with it, and I kind of really, I'm not going to say I don't care what other people think about it, but it's like I know what I believe. But she, you know, she keeps me grounded, and I think that that's, you know, that's great when, you know, we're, you know, married or in, or, you know, in some kind of a relationship that does that. So, you know, with Black Wolf Paranormal, I always like to ask this too. What is your process of doing an investigation? How do you go about that from the phone call onto the bitter end? How does Black Wolf Paranormal handle it?
I guess from first contact, the very first thing we'll do is, you know, figure out what day. That's always the big one for a bunch of working folks, you know, what day the investigation can be done. Look into, you know, there's a few people that really like to look into the history of the property and so forth. I prefer to kind of go in cold and, you know, maybe have an idea of, you know, where, you know, in the property some activity is going on, just so you can place, you know, equipment in the best locations. But I don't like to go in there with any kind of preconceived notion. So,
sure.
And I think each team member, you know, is a little different. And so we'll go in, of course, and set up our equipment, divide into teams, and try to make it, we always have such a good time, but we try to be as efficient as possible and quiet as possible. I really like the fact that everyone in our group, you know, can still have a good time while being very professional.
Right.
So we're not doing a whole lot of joking around. I mean, we're there to do business, and even though we're not charging anybody, we want to act as if we were. And, I think going out in teams more for safety than anything else, and it depends, of course, on the location.
Sure. You always want to have a wingman.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I do have to admit that I really like sometimes to kind of sneak away and just listen, and perhaps not always talk as much as just try to be present, walking their ground and so forth. But, I think everybody else, you know, kind of has their own little methods. A lot of we do certain EDP sessions. More recently, we've been using that spirit box, which, you know, I like and I don't like at the same time, because I think there's a lot of paranoia to go on with that.
The jury's still out with me, too.
Yeah. Of course, we walk in, we'll take readings, we'll take pictures of the location, and then we'll start setting up cameras, digital recorders, and all that jazz. And, of course, go through and start doing, an investigation in teams, and kind of figure out at what point, what more could be accomplished, and that's generally what will generate, shutting down the operation for the night, and then, get some rest, and of course everybody goes back to their job and so forth, and we'll divide up all the evidence.
And then, like, going back to real life, right?
Yeah, exactly, and fit in all that evidence review individually. And I really like the fact that when we do, review the evidence, we are doing it individually, and then coming back and, having a meeting and kind of showing, okay, this is what I found, and everybody's kind of presenting it, kind of critically looking at each other's evidence. And, kind of determining, okay, what would be the best thing to present, either to the client or, to the general public. or so forth. And I think when we show stuff off to the, you know, general public, we're probably showing it more to other paranormal teams.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, just say, oh, hey, you know, that might be a great place to investigate, or, you know, who knows, maybe it answered somebody else's question, even if it didn't answer one of ours or mine. So,
right.
That's the big thing. I don't think yet I've gotten anything I'd submit to the Library of Congress as proof of, the life after death or anything along that line.
Well, I mean, I really don't think that they're... It's funny that you say that, because we've had a lot of parapsychologists on the show, and that's basically where my education has been. I don't have a degree in parapsychology or anything like that, but that's what I grew up reading. As you know, because 20, 25, 30 years ago, that's what we had. You know, we didn't have like the stacks and stacks and stacks of books that you find at Borders or Barnes & Noble or the library. You had maybe four or five books, and they were usually all by the same guy, and they were in the psychology section. So it's like we didn't have all that stuff back then. And one of those things that I thought was really interesting about with parapsychology is like when you read books by Elliot O'Donnell or by Hans Holzer, you said something about, you know, just sitting in a place and getting a feel for it. It always seemed that, you know, early day parapsychologists were really big on that. And I just wanted to kind of go back to that. Which do you think is more reliable? Do you think that the human body is more reliable, or do you think that something that takes, you know, some gadget that takes batteries is more reliable?
I certainly think that the human body is more sensitive to it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to share information, it's always better to be able to quantify.
Sure.
What you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the thing is that even with those instruments, there is so much human error and perception error that can be, you know, interfere with, you know, what you're actually seeing. I mean, you could put any two people in any room, and their experience of the reality, their perception is going to be different. You know?
Sure, absolutely.
Usually similar, but you know, it's going to be different.
Yeah,
and it doesn't change when you have put that environment, both people in the same environment, and you know the external stimulus of, you know, a voice or a light or something along that line. Once again, it's different. So even if you have that equipment, you got, you know, 3 milligod. Well, what does that really mean? Okay, it's just another reading, as much mm-hmm. as, you know, somebody saying, you know, I was in that room and I got the chill. And I said, okay, what does it really mean?
Yeah.
Well, you know, even the EVP that you get, you know, that goes on to your digital recorder that nobody heard, you know, with their own ears, but it's clearly there.
Mm-hmm.
But what does it really indicate? And of course, the television shows, you know, they're always jumping to the conclusion that, well, if there was nobody else there and nobody else talking, the voice that you got on there has to be a disembodied spirit.
Right.
Well, you know, that's a big leap. You know, there's still a lot of other possibilities.
Right. Or with the television shows, too, you also see it when they're, you know, they're walking around and they're waving the, you know, their EMF detectors. And I don't think that people really realize just how incredibly sensitive those things are. I mean, just, you know, picking one up is going to make the lights or the needle jump. Your body gives off a weak electrical charge. You get naturally occurring EMFs. So it's like you can't really help but wonder. It's like, can you really rely upon these things? Are you using it properly? Because if you're using properly, you just sort of like set it on a bed or on something that's away from anything electrical.
Right.
I don't think people really realize that, you know, that you have this equipment, you have to use it correctly. Otherwise, it's just it's kind of sort of meaningless.
No, absolutely, and a lot of the EMF meters that you get are single axis. So
mm-hmm.
if you get a true reading, even if it's reading out in digital format, you're going to have to turn it into the other two axes and interpolate.
Right. You know, it's like I often... Oh, I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just, you know, I was going to say, I oftentimes say on the show that it's like, I have an EMF detector, but my kid plays with it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, but my compass, he doesn't touch. You know, I grew up using the compass when doing it, because not only does it detect those subtle changes in the electromagnetic field, but I've also found that, you know, an apparition can it can make that needle move just by, you know, touching it, or, you know, pushing forth its will or whatever to make it happen. But it is able to do that. So I think that these, for me, these older school kind of techniques are a little bit more reliable, because they're not really relying upon you know, lights and sounds and batteries. But I mean, if you can have these old school techniques, but at the same time still, like, put a camera on it and show that it's like nobody else is moving this thing, then I think that that's all the better. So I mean, yeah, definitely you got to come somewhere between the middle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
You also said something too about proving. With me, I've always believed that this is an incredibly highly subjective field. I mean, one person can say, I saw this. Another person can say, no, that's not what you saw, but this is what I experienced. Do you think that there is ever a way that we will be able to prove that there is an existence of, you know, that the intelligence survives the death of the body?
No.
Okay.
I honestly don't think so. And perhaps maybe it shouldn't be. You know, I mean, I think if people learned that there was, beyond a shadow of doubt, an afterlife that you would go to, they would probably be less cautious in their current reality.
You know what? Truer words have never been spoken. But do you think that also depends upon your religion? You know, of course, Christians believe in heaven or hell. I'm a Buddhist, so I believe in either reincarnation or the Pure Lands. Do you think that has a tendency that, okay, you die, you get left here, and or you stay back? Do you think that there are people who are, you know, they're like terrified to pass on, because it's like, hey, you know, I stole a candy bar when I was 12 years old. That means I'm going straight to hell. Do you think that has something to do with it?
Well, sure. But, you know, I mean, we're both living in a country that is incarcerating a larger percentage of the population than any other country.
Yeah. Isn't it kind of embarrassing in a way?
It really is. And, you know, so I'm not sure if they... consequences mean a whole lot to a whole lot of folks. You know, so I think if they knew that they had that mulligan, you know, in an afterlife, they probably still would not be as cautious. So
yeah,
but you know, of course, like you said, you know, it's all up to individuals. You know, it's like going into any investigation. Pretty much, if you walk in there with the beliefs that the investigation that you're walking into has anything to do with any previous investigation, well, you're making a mistake, you know, because I think when you walk in there with that strong of a belief, it makes you unable to really take into account everything that's going on.
Yeah.
So, I think it's just as individual as people are. So I think some people are going to be very cautious, other people would not be. You know, it's all about the journey. I mean, if we as paranormal investigators walked into every single investigation and already knew what the outcome would be, you know, it would be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it would be kind of pointless, and, you know, thank goodness we don't always have this preconceived notion. I mean, I know when I run an investigation, and with my group, there's only two of us, sometimes three, my friend Amy and our physical medium, Nancy Laporta, when we run an investigation, we're not there to either prove or disprove a haunting, because that's you live in your house. You are in your house, you know, relatively 24/7, 365 days a year. You know what you're experiencing. Our thing is not to go in there and say, no, this is what you're not experiencing, unless we find reason to believe so.
Right. right?
Basically, what we do is we go in, we observe, document, and report. It's like, do I don't, it doesn't, it's not going to make any difference to me, because I will admit I'm not a skeptic. I've seen way too much to even dream of calling myself that, but you can't turn your brain off either.
Right.
So it's just, you know, just going in with that preconceived notion, either way, of disprove or prove, you know, either way, you've lost your objectivity and it's gone. So at that point, it's useless, and why even bother? So that's what I personally believe. I know that a lot of people will disagree with that. You're like, oh, no, we have to go in as skeptics and we have to go in and disprove a haunting. Well, you kind of sound like a television show now, you know, you know,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
So let's talk about some of the investigations that you guys have done, or that you've done personally. You know, and I know that a lot of our listeners always like to hear the scary story, the scary ghost story first. And I'm going to admit, I like to hear the scary ones too. I think those are a lot more fun than, you know, Aunt Mildred is walking up and down the hall at, you know, between 2 and 2:15 in the morning. So, you know, I ask you, Michael White, what is the scariest thing that you've had experienced in during an investigation?
Man, I don't scare easily.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
So I think the most unnerving thing that I've ever had, I mean, of course, other than, you know, what happened when I was 7, well, probably was in, and I think it was in, I think in Bermuda, a place called St. Catherine's. I think it was St. Catherine's Fort.
Okay.
And it was an investigation. This was during my paranormal thrill-seeking days. And I was walking through some corridors there. It was very dark, even though it was daylight outside. There wasn't a whole lot of light where I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt a hand on my shoulder, and my name whispered clear as day in my ear. I was by
right.
myself. So I think every hair on my body stood up, you know, and I really wanted to run. But I just casually walked out of there. I think it mustered every bit of courage that I had. But that is the scariest. I'll be honest with you. I'm really looking forward to that investigation where we're walking in and there's the porthole to hell and chairs flying around, you know, like the movies and so forth.
But you're
I would
going
like to see that.
But you're going into have, you're going into an investigation like this?
No, I would like to.
Oh, you know, yeah.
I kind of test my own mettle that way.
Yeah.
I don't think I've had anything really frightening, and I'm sorry, because I know that would make good radio. But
well, you know what, actually...
It's just not there.
Yeah, well, you know what, it's like this. You know, at Paranormal Underground, we're not interested in making and not so much interested in entertaining people as well as, you know, just letting them know what's out there and educating people. So, you know, I only ask that because it's like, yes, it does make for good radio, but at the same time, it could also be used as a teaching method. You know, how do you deal with that kind of situation? So what is, you know, with Black with Paranormal, how often do you guys go out and investigate? Is it, you know, a once a month thing or a once a year kind of thing?
Well, I think, you know, we try to do it once a month, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of times it's just a matter of, you know, is there a place to investigate where we don't have to drive, you know, 600 miles to get to.
Sure.
And I think once a month is probably good. You know, I mean, we're like a six-person team, so,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's really hard to get, you know, everybody's work scheduled, kind of firmed up so that we can go out and do one together.
Right.
And plus, I think it's really realistic because that not only does that give you plenty of time to prepare for the investigation, but also, you know, review all that data afterward
mm-hmm.
and come up with something decent. I think that, you know, when you start getting to the point where you're doing, you know, more than about two a month, you know, for a small team where you can't divide everything up as much, you're just not going to be able to review all that, you know, hours of video, audio,
mm-hmm.
looking through the logs for personal experiences.
You know, it's funny that you say that with the personal personal experience, Michael. You know, a lot of people, they're not really too big on the personal experience. I've actually met teams that just because you have a personal experience, they're not going to really look into it because they're looking for that hard data. Do you think that the personal experience can be, I mean, obviously you can't show that as being, you know, evidence to somebody. It's like, yeah, I had somebody slap me on the ass. That doesn't mean that, you know, you weren't there. You couldn't have experienced, you didn't experience. But do you think that personal experience is just as important and absolutely. Is sort of a way to proceed?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just as important as everything else. Yeah, you might not be able to share that with somebody, you know, with a audio or a video or a reading or something along that line. But, you know, anything that goes on in an investigation, you know, is part of the investigation. So, mm-hmm. you know, if it's, you know, even if it's something as simple as, you know, walking into a space and just feeling an overwhelming, being overcome with dread, you know, or anger, or, you know, any other range of emotions I throw out there. Mm-hmm. That might be significant, you know, especially, sure. you know, later on if you find out that, you know, something significant happened in that room.
Yeah.
You know, there might be a correlation there. So, yeah, so I think it's very important.
Yeah, I one time on investigation, I don't usually provoke. I don't believe in it. I think it's kind of rude to enter into somebody else's space and, you know, and give them, you know, and hassle them.
Exactly.
But, one time I did it, though, and it was, I didn't like doing it, but I was trying to get a reaction because apparently the spirit in this place liked to grab the female's residence butt. And so I had a female investigator with, and I'm trying to do it, and I'm trying to get this guy to do it. And instead of her getting slapped in the butt, I got punched in the head.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, it was – now a lot of people are like, oh, my God, that's terrible. No, but to somebody like me, that's freaking awesome. And I wish that I had the picture, but when I was with this group, the leader of the group, he didn't like us to keep the pictures. He wanted it all to himself and then give it over to the people. You can actually clearly see a handprint on my forehead where somebody had just hauled up and gave me a smack.
Wow.
And it hurt like hell. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a personal experience, but at the same time, man, I could back it up by showing you this picture that, yeah, I have a handprint on my forehead where something hauled off and gave me a taste of the back of its hand. So
well, exactly.
It's
physical evidence, absolutely.
Yeah, so I mean, that's great evidence. I mean, that's something that not only you can take with you, but you can also show. But it's like you also get like that kind of those kind of investigations where you leave saying, you know, there's absolutely nothing there. Do you guys have that happen quite a bit with Black Wolf?
I don't know if I'd say quite a bit. It does happen, you know. Mm-hmm. And when it does happen, you know, if that happens when you're out, let's say a client contacts you and you go to their house, and it isn't anything that couldn't be explained away. Say they just have really scared feelings that, you know, they're being watched all the time, and you run into, you know, some incredible EMF, you know, mm-hmm. place, it might not be paranormal. Mm-hmm. You know, those things do happen, and I sometimes I'm grateful that they do because it kind of gives the other places that do have activity a little, I don't know, a little bit more oomph, so to speak, and also it keeps everyone objective. You know,
yeah.
if teams are going out somewhere, every single place that they go to is just chock full of activity. Well, you know, there might be a little objectivity issue there.
Yeah.
Or they're really lucky, so I can't take that away.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what kind of one of the, you know, things that I like about one of the television shows, and although it's incredibly entertaining, but it's like, everywhere you go has a demon in it, and it's like, you know, for over 20 years of investigating, I think I've dealt with two entities that I can say with all confidence were not human in origin. It's not something that's going to happen to you every other week. And I mean, I think that even a Catholic priest, a demonologist, or a Jewish rabbi is going to is going to pretty much back that up 110% with a statement like that. But yeah, you know what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and you know, Michael, when we come back, I want to touch on your book.
Okay.
Paranormal Investigator's Handbook, A Beginner's Guide. There's a lot of those out there, so I'm kind of hoping that maybe you could tell me and our listeners a little something different. So I'm going to throw it over to Cheryl, and we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're still going to be talking with Michael White of Black Wolf Paranormal. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Stick around.
First there came radio, and it was good. Then it got bad. Then there came satellite radio, and it was okay. Then it got too expensive and kind of sucked. Now there is something new, something better, something free. Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. With Stitcher, you can hear all the shows and podcasts you can imagine, rate them, and build your own station. No downloading, no syncing, no problem. Just pick a station to get started, like American News and Politics. Now, look at the shows you have to pick from, pick one, and start listening. Like it, make a favorite, and start your own station. Don't like it? Thumb it down and say bye-bye to shows like it. Or thumb it up to find more like it. Plus, you can search and find your favorite podcasts. We have over 1,000 shows to pick from. Stitcher Radio, the natural evolution in audio listening. And it's free.
On the go and missing another one of your favorite Z-Talk shows? Now you don't have to. Simply go to the Google Play Store on your Android phone and download the Z-Talk Radio app. The best part is, it's absolutely free. That's Z-Talk Radio, only found in your Google Play Store on your Android phone. Download it today.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
In her riveting novel, Breaking the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit awningpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N publishing.ca.
Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never
let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
So keep it real, keep it real.
Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Thank you. Listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Rick Hale. For the last 45 minutes or so, we have been talking to Michael White of Black Wolf Paranormal. And he's been filling us a little bit about how Black Wolf Paranormal works. And right now, we're going to switch gears. And, you know, just wanted to say, hey, Mike, thank you for sticking around for another segment. So, welcome back. Let's go into your book. Now, okay, whenever I see a book that says Handbook, A Beginner's Guide, it always makes me feel a little bit skeptical because there are so many of them out there. And I mean, I know people who have written them. And when, you know, how did it come about you sitting down to write this book? Is this about your own experiences and how you deal with them, or is it just, you know, general knowledge?
You know, it's just the general knowledge, and it's just because of the exposure I had with other teams that really didn't have any procedures to go by. And even though there were books out there and so forth that, you know, could kind of guide them, a lot of them I felt had more to do with belief systems. You know, this is how you capture a ghost. This is how you do this, you know, and so forth. But I just kind of wanted to take a general approach, you know, so it's good for the skeptic, it's good for, you know, someone who, you know, has, you know, firm beliefs that can't be shaken, and just be able to go out and do an investigation and come up with some real results. And I wanted to write it so it was simple. In some areas, I think I simplified too much, and of course, you know, I guess anyone who's probably written a book would like to go back and redo it, you know, completely.
I think Shakespeare would like to do that, and he's dead, so, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, I mean, maybe you can just get him to transcribe via EVP or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to really make it simple and fun. I think I took a lot of information from, you know, my personal experiences, the way Black Wolf does business, And hopefully anyone that reads that either is going to start a team or wants to join a team but just doesn't know, you know, where to go. Mm-hmm. I think every paranormal team has people contacting them and say, you know, hey, I'm really, you know, I just watched Ghost Hunters or I just watched whatever, and I'm really interested in joining a paranormal team.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, most of the time they don't have any experience other than, you know, they're visited by their dead aunt, whatever it happens to be, or something along that line. And so, I mean, they've got the interest, and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to have them, you know, actually come in and say, okay, I actually have a clue. You know, yeah, they might not know the difference between a BNC and an RCA cable yet, but that's not important. They've got an overall idea of what the investigative process is all about. That's pretty much what I wrote that book for.
Yeah. Well, let's just say, okay, Michael, I'm like, I just got interested in it. Say I just saw the ghost of my dead cat running around my house. So I'm interested in understanding more about paranormal activity and investigating. So I come to you and it's like, you know, Michael, what exactly is your advice on joining a team? What is it that I should be looking for?
Well, you know, when you're joining a team, you want to make sure that you're going to like the people that are in it. So, I mean, if there's a way that not only could you kind of prove yourself with knowing something about the investigative process, but also, you know, meet up with them and make sure that, you know, these are people that you can investigate with that, you know, will have at least, you know, similar philosophies of life. They don't have to be exact. They don't have to match. match perfectly, but compatibility is really a big issue. And if you have team members that simply don't like each other, I don't care what investigative location you're going to, you're not going to be successful at all.
Right.
You
bring that kind of negative energy to it.
Absolutely. Because, you get out of anything what you put into it. So, even in walking into an investigation, you're walking in there with a good attitude, with people that you really enjoy being with. Mm-hmm. Your chances of being successful in whatever the investigative goal happens to be, you've got a greater chance of actually meeting that goal.
Right. So, okay. We have a series of questions from a listener. You're already familiar with Elaine Davidson from WOOPI, and she gave us some rapid fire series of questions in the chat room, and they're great questions. And I would really like to turn this over to her, but I'm not going to. I'm too egotistical for that. But basically, she does have a series of questions that are really great, and I would like to ask them, and hopefully we can get some real answers for them, and for anybody else who may have this, be interested in finding out a little bit more. Question number one. This is what Elaine says. Isn't that man Risa Castle on the cover of Michael's book? What is going on there? Or can Michael tell us? Now, is it man Risa Castle?
It certainly is. It certainly is. And I think that that photo was taken during an investigation in December of, I think, 2010. Yeah, I think it was 2010. It could have been 2009. When I took that shot, everything was just clear as day. And later when I was just taking pictures. I wasn't even looking at them while I was taking them. That's how many pictures I was taking. Mm-hmm. And when I saw that the next morning, I showed it to a few people. They're pointing out, the nostrils and mouth and teeth and the whole thing. So, what kind of led up to that, me going outside in the first place, was I was doing an investigation with the team, and there were a few psychics on that team, mm-hmm. and one of them was basically in communication with some entity inside the castle, and she was saying that something was going to happen to Roman or a Roman, side, and none of it was really making sense.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I'm just going to conduct my own investigation for a while, to kind of get away from everybody. And when I was out there taking those pictures, and then after I looked at it, I started thinking, I was raised Roman Catholic. Now I've got this thing, in my face, mm-hmm. so to speak. Maybe that might have been the connection. I don't know. But
what are your thoughts on what are your thoughts on psychic ability?
I've seen some people, very talented people, do some come up with some incredible things. And I've also seen some people that believe that they were more psychic than they probably are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I think, I'm definitely not going to discount it. I've just seen too many things that really opened my eyes. I mean, I've met some, especially since now I'm kind of, in the community that is quite full of people with some really incredible abilities. William Becker, and meeting Karen and talking to her and, there's some very credible people out there, and even in my previous group, they were great. I think there are ways that you can use these people and their abilities and investigation mm-hmm. to your best advantage. But sometimes getting too many of them in one spot isn't the greatest thing for for, you know, coming up with documented evidence.
Yeah, no, that's actually quite true.
It's kind of hard to catch an EVP when everybody's talking because things are talking directly to them and they're talking for them, and it's like, okay,
I've actually asked psychics that I've worked with in the past, write what you're saying or thinking or experiencing down. Right. It's not evidence. It is a way to proceed. And, you know, it's like you don't have to keep talking the whole time. Okay, I understand the fact that you are feeling Grandma Myrtle right now, and she's telling you that she likes, you know, putting her baked pies out on the back windowsill for everybody to smell. But it's like, you don't have to tell me, write it down. And usually you get really great evidence off of something like that. But let's get back to the question at hand. So what else was it that was going on there at Manresa Castle that prompted you to use such a famous place on the cover of your book?
Well, you know, I mean, most people, especially in the Pacific Northwest, right away recognized, you know, where that is, and I know a lot of kings have investigated there, and it was just a really striking photograph that I could not reproduce, though I tried. We recently, Black Wolf, went to Manresa, I guess it was a few months ago, and we tried to recreate a lot of the evidence that I had picked up before. Couldn't do it successfully. There was another photo where I actually had a shadow figure captured that, at the time of publishing this book, I was not able to get in there and try to recreate that, see if it could be anything else. So I did use that particular photo.
Sure.
So we received a few EVPs, but during the investigation with my previous group, but the psychics that were with us were very active. And those of us that, you know, are not as psychic kind of got left out. It kind of became spectators
sure.
than anything else. But, you know, that happens too. I think everybody wants to, you know, have that personal connection. You know, like everybody wants to be, you know, Elliot with E.T.
Right.
Close interpersonal connection with, you know, that entity or, you know, the alien or whatever.
You know, for those of us who, you know, I'm familiar with Manresa Castle, but, you know, for a lot of our listeners who aren't, if you could just give us like a really brief history of the place and what it is that they're that people are dealing with that, you know, what kind of hauntings are going on there?
The castle itself, it used to belong to a group of priests. And there's been a number of stories that basically are unfounded, especially regarding a hanging in there by one of the priests that hung himself in one of the attic towers and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
A suicide that supposedly took place over a woman whose husband or lover was killed at sea or something along that line, so she jumped from the third floor to her death. A lot of these are unfounded, and I think those stories came about because there was activity going on, and people were kind of making up the stories to kind of explain the activity.
Right. It's like that urban legend. Well, it happened to my brother's cousin's uncle's former roommates, and they're either roommates with, you know, Dark Helmet from Spaceballs, or they're actually hearing a story. Usually it's an urban legend, though. Would you say so?
That's absolutely correct. And I think a lot of that is what we're dealing with in Manresa, but the place does have activity. I mean, guests are, they have logs where guests have written down that their bed is shaking or covers being ripped off of them, you know, in the middle of the night. We've Black Wolf has captured, pretty clear EVPs there. So, I mean, there is a lot of activity at that location, but it just doesn't quite fit, the history that kind of, I think, somewhat manufactured. I don't know by whom. The place, it is a pretty good hot spot. It's a matter of getting in there at the right time of year where it isn't too expensive. That's really a beautiful location to be in.
Yeah. So basically, it's fair to say that you know that things are happening there, but you don't know by whom.
Exactly. Yeah. But, unusually, I received an EVP back in my December of 2010. The investigation that had when we asked who it was at MID, and when we went back a few months ago. Got another EVP with the same voice, and if you look at the waveform, in the frequency spectrum, it looks like the exact same voice answering, and it came up with it again. So, it's kind of interesting, a couple years different, and you're getting the same voice. And, I like when that happens, because you don't often get to go to, the same location twice, and when you leave, you come up with the exact same voice answer.
Yeah.
Unusual.
Yeah, but I've been on. We did an investigation. We went back there a couple of times actually. When I belonged to a much larger group, and the second time we went there, I myself and everybody else in the group heard the male disembodied voice say my name. And then one of the psychics who was part of the group, I trusted her very much. She told me, she's like, after we all heard the voice, she's like, oh, he remembers you very well from the last time.
Wow.
So that was a very cool thing. So yeah, I mean, I definitely know, all too well about that. Dealing with the same entity a couple of different times, and they get to know you after a while. The second question that Elaine from Whoopi asks, in your book, you have some cool forms. Now, I've seen books that have these. Christopher Balzano's, he's got a book out there, Picture Yourself Ghost Hunting, that has some really great, forms in it that you can, swipe from him. One of them, she says, is an investigation plan. Does Black Wolf Paranormal use this investigation plan? And if so, how often do you change it at the investigation location?
We don't always use it, to be honest with you. There are some times where you really have to kind of go in and figure everything out once you get there. You just don't, have that capability of doing a pre-inspection. Other times, we can't use it at all. Black Wolf just did an investigation at the old Montana prison in Montana. And that wasn't, a place that we could really, do a pre-investigation and develop a plan and this and that. Because, the activity is all over the place. So, I think that form is an ideal situation, where you contacted by a local person that's having a specific activity, specific location. You can go in there, draw up that plan, figure out where you want to place everything before you even get there for the investigation.
Now, would you say that's the difference? Sorry, Michael. I mean, would you say that that's the difference between between doing a private residence and doing a public place? Using these forms, I mean. Okay.
Yeah, most definitely. I think a public place, especially a public place that you have to pay to go into, you're not going to go there more than once. So once you get there, you're just going to have to kind of wing it.
Yeah.
And in all actuality, there's a lot to. I love planning. Okay, and I don't know if it's because of my years in the military or being a Virgo or just being an inflexible person in general, I'm not sure, but walking into a location, especially with a group of people who are sensitive, sometimes you can really get some great evidence just based on that. So winging it a lot of times, I think, is the way to go. You really have to go with the gut feeling. But,
yeah.
You know,
I'm a Pisces and I usually fly by the seat of my pants, but man, when I'm on an investigation, I have got to have a plan. You know what I'm saying? There has to be one in place. So yeah, I definitely know how that feels.
Well, you know, and when you have set parameters, usually, you know, from a family that's in distress for one reason or another, you know, mm-hmm. in a particular house, walking in there with that plan is just going to be what sets you apart from, you know, the other teams that might be going in there looking like Scooby-Doo, you know, and from one room to another.
So you have a giant talking dog with a speech impediment and a really groovy van?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we're in the Scooby snacks anyway, I wonder. I think probably the distinction of one would be for a public place, one would be for a private investigation. It's pretty good. I guess I talked enough about that.
Now you talk about, you know,
pretty good, because I usually don't talk this much. So after about 15 minutes, I bore myself.
No, I mean, no, absolutely not. I mean, I think it's a really great conversation so far. You know, you talk about, you know, having, you know, coming into families with distress. I mean, that is something very real that we all, you know, have to deal with. I mean, I've personally been in homes where everybody is sleeping in the same room because they're terrified to be alone. Does Black Wolf, or do you guys come across that kind of thing much?
No.
Not
as often. I'd love to be able to help folks out, but I certainly don't want that to happen to, you know, to people in the first place. So.
Oh no, of course not. No, but I mean, it does come up from time to time.
It does, and I think if anything, that's a big motivator for the entire team, because I don't think that there's anyone on our team that isn't willing to do everything they possibly can do to help someone out.
Yeah.
So, we run into any situation like that. We've had a couple, but they're rare, and I'm glad they're rare.
Yeah. No, it is good that they're rare. It's kind of funny that you say that, because it's like you seem to come across more of, like, you know, the friendly apparition, you know, is, you know, giving your kid a kiss before it goes to bed at night. But then again, I think that all has to do with perception. You know, one person may think that is, like, really awesome, but the other person might think, oh my God, this thing is, you know, hurting my children or whatever. And that's just not always the case.
Well, you know, it kind of falls into fear of the unknown. And
yes.
One of the things that we can do, you know, as a successful team is kind of hopefully come up with some answers so that it's not so unknown.
Right.
You know, come up so it's understandable, and not only looking at it from a different perspective, it offers the family a little background information so that they might be able to change their perception of what's going on. You know, Casper the Friendly Ghost, you know, in your house, if you don't know it's Casper the Friendly Ghost, might be terrifying to somebody. So,
sure.
There you go.
Well, you know, in my house, I have a couple of entities. I have one here in the basement. We call her Pauline, and, you know, she likes to make her appearance every now and then with a rap on the wall, or I've actually seen her out of the corner of my eye before. My wife, she doesn't like coming down here by herself. It's all due to perception. I don't find that kind of thing scary, whereas she does, and I think it all boils down to the person. But what it all boils down to really is you know, that pursuit of the truth. Elaine has a couple other more, you know, a couple other questions that I would like to, you know, to get to. You have done Haunting for Hope for the last few years. First off, you know, for those who aren't familiar with it, what exactly is Haunting for Hope?
Well, Haunting for Hope is an event that we put on for both paranormal teams and the public.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, have guest speakers come in and usually some other activities and so forth. Kind of to educate, you know, people about the paranormal, and also for teams to kind of get together. You know, anytime you can get teams together, it it's just a blast.
Sure.
Because everybody comes with their stories and techniques, and it's just great to meet folks. But everything that we do for that Haunting for Hope, you know, as far as raising money and all that, all goes to the local Fishline Food Bank, which is the North Dakota Food Bank.
Okay.
So, what's really nice is that, you know, we're with people that enjoy the same things that we enjoy, and we're able to help out a lot of people. I think we were close, if not more, than $800 this last April as far as a donation to the food bank. So,
see, and that's outstanding. You know, it's great having that kind of thing going on, because I think it makes people, you know, see, it's like, you know, we're just, you know, that a paranormal investigator, a paranormal team, whatever, parapsychologist, is, you know, we care too. We're not just about, you know, being scared or finding the best, you know, I hate using the term, the holy grail of the paranormal, you know, the picture of the full-bodied apparition, which, you know, there are thousands of them out there, so it's not really a holy grail. But, it, you know, it definitely puts more of a human face on what it is that we do.
It certainly does. And it also shows everyone that you're part of that community.
You know, right.
Every other citizen. So, it's nice that you also get known for something other than what the public, you know, kind of looks at you as a ghost hunter.
Mm-hmm.
You were wearing some, had some kind of Elmer Fudd thing going on, but
you know, it is so funny that you say that, because it's like whenever somebody says the word ghost hunter, I think of Elmer Fudd getting rid of the rifle, picking up an EMF detector, walking around saying, "Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting apparitions." You know, it's so funny that you said that, but proceed. Go ahead.
Right. No, I'm pretty much about that. That's pretty much it. But I think, it's really nice that, you know, your community shows that being a paranormal investigator is not just about going into folks' homes and raising a ruckus and then posting it on YouTube. You know, you're actually there because you care. And and our team, you know, I tell you, everybody gives such a big percentage of their time for that. You know, especially Colette, Brenda, Katie, and Jennifer. They put a lot into this last one. Of course, I don't want to discount AJ and Matthew and myself for that matter, but but those folks really put so much into that. You know, so much planning.
Yeah.
Makes you feel good when you're helping other people out.
Oh, absolutely. Question number four, and it's the last one, I do believe, from Whoopi. From Elaine. I'm sorry, I just love that name every time. It's like, Whoopee! But she says, do you believe it is important for different teams to get together and share ideas? Why or why not? And that's a question that I have, too, that I like to ask people. Is networking always a good idea?
You know, I think if it's done positively, absolutely. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what if, you know, a team found that, using an EMF meter combined with a peanut butter sandwich or something.
I can get behind that. I love peanut butter.
You know, it gave them the best results in the world. Yeah, I mean, I think anything that we can do from one team to another to, you know, help just keep the credibility that I think paranormal investigating is kind of gaining. I think over the years, people are more accepting of what we're going out and doing. And I think teams helping each other out, you know, especially sharing knowledge, it can't ever be a bad thing.
No, you're correct, yeah.
There's always going to be drama in any, you know, big organization or community. But you can't escape that. But yeah, I cannot think of any reason why. I know that my group, if we ever had any evidence or a technique that worked wonderfully, we'd be more than happy to share that with any team that asked. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I don't see any negatives to that at all.
Well, you know what? But there is though. Recently, Karen was telling me about how an associate of hers was dealing with a paranormal group out in their general area, and basically, you know, they're douchebags. Okay, I'm just going to put it right out there on the line like that. That's exactly what they are. They were harassing these other groups. They were threatening other groups. They were, you know, talking about how great they were and that these other groups didn't matter, and that these other groups, if they wanted to come into an area, they had to call them first. You know, I think that's kind of the negative side of networking, that it's like you're going to have these incredibly egotistical people that are, you know, going to tell you what it is that you can and can't do. So there's definitely that negative side to it. I mean, how would you deal with somebody like that? Or like, Michael, you can't come over here and investigate because this is our area, man. How would you deal with that?
Personally, I don't think I would recognize your authority. Or
yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Paranormal turf wars, you know. That's kind of ridiculous. Maybe that's the next reality show, paranormal turf wars. So,
I would love to see that. Either have dance-offs or, you know, knife fights. Be like the Warriors or whatever. You know, great gang movie. Turn it into like, you know, Taps versus Ghost Adventures. You know, fight to the death. That would be awesome. But,
just stand on either side and taunt each other.
Yeah, I definitely think that would make for a good show. But you know, but you do have that. You have that kind of drama. Like I was talking at the top of the show, and you know, I was accused of ranting, and I'm not ranting. But you seem to have that where it's like you got one team that's talking crap about another team, or as like Lane put in here, para-territory is a joke, and wow. It is a joke. It's like here where I'm in Chicago, a lot of people will say, well, this person owns the city of Chicago. Well, no, they don't own the city of Chicago. I can go to Hull House tomorrow if I want to and ask if I could take a look around. I don't have to call this person or that person. I just think that causes a lot of unnecessary drama and a lot of really bad feelings between people. I mean, we're supposed to be doing the same thing here.
You know, I have yet to see anything like that in this particular area. But quite honestly, I don't get involved in that, any of that kind of drama. So sometimes I can kind of be oblivious to that. But
yeah.
Wow, that's pretty intense.
Yeah. Well, in your own group, how do you guys, you know, keep the band together?
You know, I think because we're all such good friends, it requires no effort, you know. Colette does a great job of keeping, you know, everyone in the loop of everything at all times. You know, it's to the point that sometimes we kind of get overloaded. It's like, what on? What are we talking about? What's our next meeting? You know, what's going on? But no, I mean, we have a great set of communication skills between every member. And it just works out. I don't think, quite honestly, I don't think I've ever been with a particular group of any kind, you know, with any activity. I mean, not even the two beans and a weenie bowling team that I was on. That everyone gets along so well, even though, you know, a lot of us have some, you know, different ideas of what we're doing. Everyone's respectful. It's kind of magical. I don't know. I've never seen anything like it. I think Blackwell really has some magic going on.
Well, that's good that you...
Communication. I think everything... done a great job of keeping that communication going. You know, everybody is always on the same page. And I think that makes a big difference.
No, you're absolutely right. You don't want to pull your marriage and stuff like that into a group. That's why it's like I'm glad that it's also like you said, it's nice that you can, hunt with friends. I guess you could say like with the people that I work with. Nancy, she's like a mom to me, and Amy is like a little sister to me. So it's like, it's nice to hear that Black Wolf has very much, seems to be very family oriented in that sense, that that's how you guys keep everything
very
together.
Very much so. Yeah, and I think that everyone is very respectful that not only are we, a team family, but that we all have families of our own and so forth. So when a team member has a family thing going on, everyone's really understanding. Okay, you can't make this investigation. You've got this going on. We've even had different family events go on and invite the team to it. So there's a lot of integration and it just works out. It just works.
That's fantastic. So, Michael, before we wrap up, and is there anything that you would like, to talk about in any further detail? You have any websites or, where to find your book, any kind of events that are coming up that you want to touch on?
Well, of course, my book's available. Gosh, it's even available on the Amazon Reader. What is that called?
The Kindle?
Thank you very much. I'm such a tactile guy. I like the
Yeah, I know. I'm the same way.
Get the pages dog-eared and written in and so forth. So it's available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and Kindle. And when I wrote the book, I'll be honest with you, I had more fun writing the book than I definitely didn't want to peddle it. It's like the whole goal for me was to get it written, move on from there. And all the proceeds that I do get from this book all go into the team. Our website for Black Wolf Porn Paranormal, to get this correct, I'll read it off of the card.
Okay.
Black Wolf, all one word, with a hyphen, paranormal.com.
Okay.
And of course, we post the little bios of the entire team there, as well as a lot of our investigation reports are put up there, with the exception of private investigations. So those are probably the best websites I could give you. Other than that, I really appreciate you having me on here, and I think I've talked more in the last however long we've been on than I have in a long time. I'm pretty much a to-the-point kind of guy. That's why my book is so short. It's short, sweet, to the point.
Yeah, personally with me, I've never really been one to talk on the phone either, but for whatever reason, I seem to be okay doing this kind of thing. But yeah, so sure. You know what, Michael, thanks for coming on. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Like I say to a lot of people, it's really nice talking to somebody in the field who gets it. You know what I'm saying? That this is not about, being the next great television show, or this is, not being the next great author, or, whatever it is. It's always nice talking to somebody who gets it. So thank you very much for this, great conversation. It was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for having me, and it was very nice talking with you.
Very nice talking to you as well. Thank you, Michael. That was Michael White, ladies and gentlemen, investigator for Black Wolf Paranormal, also author of the Paranormal Investigator Handbook, A Beginner's Guide. You can find it on your Nook or your Kindle, or you can, order it offline or find it in a bookstore. I haven't read it, I'll be honest with you, but, if Michael wrote it, it must be a really good read. So, again, thanks, Michael, and we hope to have you back again sometime.
All right, thank you.
All right, have a good night.
All right, you too.
So, Cheryl.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, I love bringing you on. It's so much fun.
Thank you. I love coming on.
I know, like I always say, you have to keep the talent happy. And if that means making me happy by bringing you on the show, and I know Karen feels the same way,
it's
that's what's going to happen.
It's all worthwhile. It's all worthwhile. Hey, thanks, Michael. I appreciate him coming back on. And hopefully we can talk to him again. That was a great conversation.
So, you know, what is it that we got coming up on the show? You know, anything interesting, anything new? You know, what's going on with the magazine?
The magazine is on hiatus. Well, we're on an unofficial hiatus with the magazine. We were hoping to catch up, but a few things fell through. So, you know, we'll catch up eventually. Mm-hmm. And I'm still hoping that we can get an issue out in mid-August. But I can't make any promises at this point, but I'm hoping so. So mm-hmm. look out for that. And then what's new on the show next week, August 16th, we are talking with Ben Hansen from Fact or Faked Paranormal Files.
That is one that I am looking forward to. We had Mike Roberts on the show, I think it was about a month or so back, and there's just been a lot of controversy with this guy saying that, you know, he couldn't possibly have been a real FBI agent, but apparently he's much older than he looks, and he was really a real FBI field agent. So, you know, it'll be nice getting that from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, exactly. And let's see. I know that Ben Hansen is doing some shows, I believe, here in California, and then you know, in the next month, and then going through, I think, to the Queen Mary event that Ernie Alonzo from Haunted Orange County told us about when he was on recently. And mm-hmm. Ernie will be joining us with Ben Hansen. And Ben, I believe, will be on at the first hour. And then I think we'll have a second guest, although I'm not quite sure who that is yet.
Oh, is Romero coming back on? Because I really like that guy. That dude's got a lot of energy.
I hope so. I'll check. I actually don't know if he's going to come back on, but I can ask. Okay. And hey, I'm sure it's a possibility if he's available.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So, yeah. And then we are off on vacation August 23rd. Mm-hmm. So we won't have a show then. But August 30th we will, with Spike Paranormal's Shane Pittman and Brandon Gamble. And mm-hmm. That is August 30th. And then I believe we're into September, and I think that's when Karen's coming back.
Yeah, you know what? I got to be honest with you. I miss Karen. You know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Karen is the reason why I asked to write for you guys to begin with, you know, so, you know, and I just, you know, I think she's a really great writer and I think she's a really great host and, you know, I really like working with her and I miss her when she's not around.
And here I thought it was my personality and charm, Rick. I'm really disappointed.
It is your personality and charm. And it's Chad's D&D acumen that I like as well.
There you go.
So, yeah. I think we're just going to, you know, wrap it up a little bit early tonight, maybe?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, unless there's something else that you have.
Besides small talk, I don't have a whole lot.
Well, what's the small talk, you know? I mean, you know, what's going on? You know, maybe that we can entertain a little bit longer as, you know, people start jumping ship here.
Yeah, right. I tend to have that effect on people. I was very happy yesterday. Yesterday was Wednesday, August 8th. Guess why I was happy on Wednesday, August 8th?
Do tell.
Because one of my favorite paranormal shows came back on air.
Oh, yeah, Paranormal Witness. Kind of like that one.
Oh, yeah. Did you see it last night?
No, I didn't, but I was reading something that that it focused on the haunting in San Pedro.
It sure did. Yeah.
Yeah, we've had Barry Taff on the show a couple of times, and you know he's always a great guy. He's the kind of guy whose brain that you want to pick.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, that he didn't really have a whole lot of participation with that show. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. He did not, but the show did profile the case involving. At the time, this was in the late 80s, early 90s, mm-hmm. I believe,
yes.
A single mother, her name was Jackie Hernandez, and a haunting that took place in a house she was running in San Pedro, California.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Dr. Taff had something to do with the case, but he wasn't actually a participant of the show. I think mm-hmm. the primary investigators were were interviewed, but
Barry Conway and Barry Conrad and Jeff Wheatcraft, correct?
Correct. Yeah, and the case is just crazy. If for listeners who might be familiar with their paranormal history, this case involved an investigation team coming out to investigate the house, and one of the a field photographer came along. He wasn't a paranormal investigator per se, but he was a field photographer, and the activity took them up to the attic. And upon a second visit to the attic, this person was actually hung up in the rafters by an unseen force. So it was very a very scary and traumatic event, and not to mention what the homeowner and the family went through. But the team itself got caught up in this paranormal activity that was just beyond the norm, I would think. So it was an interesting episode. Yeah.
I mean, I remember that one time we had Barry on, when we had Barry on, and Dr. Taff, and he was telling us that it was his opinion that a lot of what was going on in the house was psychokinetic or otherwise created by Jackie Hernandez.
Was that his opinion? I really don't remember that, but was that his opinion?
Yeah, that was pretty much his opinion, that it was like that it was more, a lot of it was poltergeist in origin, which of course, you know, as a poltergeist would be in origin of being a person centered rather than a place centered.
Well, but let me ask this too. If it's a poltergeist or a person centered, would apparitions be seen?
And you know what? That was the question that I had for him, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
See, personally with me, I have always believed that although a poltergeist is person-centered, that this is something that's completely psychokinetic. It comes from, you know, a person, you know, who has some kind of latent psychic ability and stress and whatever. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a child. It can be somebody as old as 90 years old as well. But there are many, you know, documented poltergeist cases where there are apparitions involved.
Interesting.
And
yeah,
right,
go ahead.
And a lot of people will ask, well, how is that possible? It is a possibility, in my personal opinion, as a researcher, as a psychical researcher and investigator, that this energy is so great that it either draws things in or it wakes something up that may be dormant in the house.
Yeah, I think it sounded like something was woken up in the house, and there was, you know, witnesses to these events, and this woman experiencing these events, she was, you know, choked in her sleep. She saw blood running down the walls of her kitchen. All sorts of great things like that. And so it was things happening that I just find it hard to think that it could originate from a person. But I suppose it's possible.
Yeah. I mean, there's one case that I've always been interested in. And it's what's called the Black Monk of Pontefract. And it took place back in the 1960s in England. And it started off very subtle. When the subtlety was this, it seemed to be centering around a young boy. His name was Philip, I think his name was. And he and his grandmother were in their house one day while the rest of the family was on a holiday. And all of a sudden, there was like these ashes that seemed to be falling out of the air, not so much coming from the ceiling, but somewhere between the ceiling and where they were. And these ashes filled up the house. And then it started going into puddles of water appearing on the floor.
Right.
And then it started to go into things, you know, moving at random, to things being thrown around the house, pictures falling off the wall, flying off the wall or whatever. And then, now this sounds like the classic poltergeist case, that here was this boy, he was 14 years old at the time, I believe, and he appeared to be the center of what was going on,
okay.
focus or the agent, whatever you want to call it. But then people started saying that they were seeing what they described as being a Cluniac monk. And Cluniac monks were very distinct. They wore black habits, and they had like a very large cross that they wore around their neck, and it hung pretty down to the midsection. And like I said, it was black rather than the normal brown monk's habit of medieval Europe. And basically what this was is they believed it was a Cluniac monk because very nearby this house was a Cluniac monastery that had not been there for several centuries. And it's in my personal opinion, and I believe it was also Colin Wilson's opinion as well, Colin Wilson, the great occult teacher and investigator, that whatever was going on in this house, that this poltergeist energy had woken this thing up and drawn it in, and that's why people were experiencing and interacting with this supposed monk.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think it's a possibility that this energy is so amazing that it can, you know, more or less raise the dead.
Well, the Jackie Hernandez, who was the woman in that story on the show last night, was, I guess, newly divorced. She was pregnant. She had a small child, a small boy, and was probably going through a lot. But she wanted peace. She wanted, you know, her house back. Ultimately, she left and never went back because, you know, there was not a whole lot done for her as far as helping to get rid of the activity. But supposedly, nothing ever happened after that. So,
yeah, you know,
I don't know.
But sometimes too, when it comes to poltergeist, psychoanalysis and therapy does work well. Nandor Fodor, for example, who was a great great mid 20th century parapsychologist, doctor of psychology. I'm sorry, what's that?
I love it when you pull these names out, and I'm like, who the heck is that?
He was able to put a lot of what he was investigating, although he was convinced that there was like real, you know, supernatural paranormal activity going on, he was able to put a lot of it rest by just giving people therapy. And it's the human mind is amazing, and we don't really fully understand it yet. And,
you
know, is there a psychic ability that's in the mind? It would appear there is.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your thought.
No, that was it.
Well, before we wrap up or talk about the next thing, I wanted to do a shameless plug, because you actually wrote about the Black Monk of Pontefract in Paranormal Underground Radio magazine. I did this last time. And it's in the July 2009 issue of Paranormal Underground magazine, and you can
long
time ago. You can read it for free, listeners. You can read it for free on paranormalunderground.net. Just when you go to the homepage, just hover over the tab called Magazine, scroll down to Magazine Archive, and then go to the July 2009 issue. And it's actually the Psychic Phenomena issue. It's really good. On the cover, we have a cover profile of Professor Paranormal Lloyd Auerbach. It was great. It was really good.
Lloyd Auerbach. I would love to get Lloyd back on the show. He was such a great guest, you know. And
Yeah. It's like when we talk to parapsychologists, for like days after, I'm like thinking about the things they said and the theories that they bring up, and I'd love to talk to them again for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've never made it any secret that I basically worship at the feet of parapsychology, only because I think that, you know, and a lot of people, they criticize me for this, but it's my personal belief that it's like, I think that this is the real science of paranormal investigation and research.
To me,
but to me, there's nothing scientific about going into a house and you know, yelling at something that may or may not even be there. I mean, there's real experimentation that's going on.
I wasn't laughing at you. I got cut up in the chat room conversation. I was laughing at that. I'm sorry.
Oh, Chesty LaRue? Who is that? Fifi LaBouche. I like that. That's even better. Guy Finkelwinky. Yeah, you know what? Wasn't he a porn star in the 70s?
Sure, I have no clue.
I have no idea either. But okay, with that being said, we've, you know, gone from the sublime to the completely ridiculous. I think that's the best way to end this week's show, huh?
Oh yeah, I love that. That's awesome. And hey, if you're live, stay tuned for the show that's next up on ztalkradio.com. That is Fox City's Paranormal.
Yeah, stick around. It's a pretty decent show. So thanks, everybody, for listening. You know, thanks again to Michael White from Black Wolf Paranormal, as well as the author of The Paranormal Investigator Handbook, A Beginner's Guide. It was a great conversation. And, you know, tune in next week. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to offer you guys another great show.
Oh, we will. You know it.
We will. We will. Absolutely. So have a good night, everybody. See you next week.
Good night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.